You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lore cast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast. I'm N7 the Legend.
And I'm Genesis. Join us
as we explore along tides of light
and through shoals of dust
to see where this lore began
and consider where it may go.
Specters, welcome back to another exciting and special episode of the Mass Effect Lorecast. I am your host, N7 the Legend, and joining me as always is Genesis. Genesis, how's it going?
Things are going pretty dang good this week.
Oh yeah. I would say the same for me as well, but I'm actually getting a notification right now. Do you hear that? We're hearing the voices. The whispers are clawing at our minds, and they are demanding that we talk about this imminent threat.
It's over. Give up.
Of dark energy. So we are finally going to talk about dark energy. And if you like that indoctrination sound effect, well, you're welcome, because I actually created that. That was my voice. I was messaging you, Genesis, and I was like, I need to find that scene in the Mass Effect trilogy where indoctrination is like taking over somebody. And I could swear I remember voices or whispers, like very soft whispers in the background. But then I couldn't find the scene, so I couldn't actually clip it from the game. So I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'll just make it myself. But anyway, yes, we're going to be talking about dark energy finally today.
Oh, yes. It's a very interesting topic in that it's semi-science, yet real science. It's science fiction, and we don't really know what's going to be happening with it. And it's also a storyline that kind of fell off the map. And people, the fan base, wanted more of it, but unfortunately we didn't get a whole lot of it. I'm also going to be hearing those whispers for the rest of the night, so thanks for creeping me out. Love it.
Good. I'm glad. So this is Commander Shrinky Shep's final month as our Reaper tier patron. He is relinquishing the mantle of our salvation, so to speak, but his final command was that we dive into this arguably abandoned dark energy plot line. And I'm going to go over why I just said arguably abandoned in a little bit, but if you've been active in the Mass Effect forums or online communities at all over the past decade, then chances are, like you said, Genesis, you've probably heard about this idea, this dark energy idea, because it's post Mass Effect 3 legacy absolutely dwarfs its actual prominence inside the games. Like, it has become this part of the Mass Effect zeitgeist, far larger than is actually seen inside the lore. And you'll see what I'm talking about as we get into it.
Yeah, so let's start with what even is dark energy.
Right. So before any astronomy buffs or astrophysics buffs jump into our comments and be like, actually, I'm going to give the Mass Effect definition of what dark energy is. Dark energy is a real theoretical concept. I don't think it's actually been proven in our own universe, but in Mass Effect, dark energy is basically the energy created by running electrical currents through element zero. So you might be thinking, well, that's pretty much like all of the unique tech in Mass Effect. Think about biotics, starships, FTL travel, the mass relays. Dark energy is being created by pretty much anything using Mass Effect technology. So when biotics like throw a lance at you or pull you or put you in a stasis pod, they're doing so by manipulating dark energy.
Oh, okay. So it's not like an equal yet opposite reaction to using some form of energy. We are manipulating dark energy to do it.
That's right. And it's not like, so we're doing it on like a societal scale in Mass Effect. You know, it's like, think about every day how many times people in the Mass Effect universe are using biotics, they are traveling at FTL speeds in starships, they are going through a mass relay, they are shooting a gun which propels the projectile at faster than light speeds, or close to light speeds, I think, I forget. But they're doing that with altering the mass of the projectile through Mass Effect technology. That's just a few examples. But think about all of the instances of that happening, and you can get a good idea of like how prevalent dark energy is being created in the Mass Effect universe.
Oh my gosh, that's intense levels. Okay, so that puts the scope on things of where it is. But where do we see this come up in the games?
So the first recorded instances that I have found of dark energy specifically being mentioned were in the Codex entries for biotics, Mass Effect fields, and the Javelin weapon systems for starships, all of those in Mass Effect 1. Those were also mentioned in the Microsoft-written physical handbook called the Galactic Codex or something, Galactic Handbook, that came with the collector's edition of Mass Effect 1. So that was one of the things that that Microsoft didn't mess up when they were writing that, because I guess Microsoft wrote that handbook and not BioWare. So some of the details were lost, some of them were gotten wrong, but those actually transferred over. Other than that, I cannot find or recall a specific moment in Mass Effect 1 where dark energy is explicitly mentioned or discussed or even alluded to as a point of interest. So for me, that's kind of interesting because so little has been mentioned, so little research has been done on this byproduct of technology that all of modern galactic society is built upon.
Yeah, and I can definitely see from like a real world gameplay developer standpoint that throwing too many new concepts at a gamer would be like, and what does this have to do with anything? And especially if they weren't planning on picking it back up. So keeping Mass Effect 1 really about world building or galaxy building, I see what they were trying to do there.
And if you're one of those people who was like, okay, dark, was really hoping dark energy had a larger role to play throughout the entire trilogy, then looking back at Mass Effect 1, you might be thinking, okay, but this is just kind of where they're sowing the seeds of this more sinister plot line going on in the background while you're focused on something comparatively superficial with Saren.
Mm-hmm. There's that side to it, too. But I also know that it comes up a lot more beyond Mass Effect 1. Obviously, we wouldn't be doing this episode.
Right. Yeah. Narrative-wise, that's when it kicks in Mass Effect 2. The first time this comes up as something possibly important is Tali's recruitment mission in Mass Effect 2. As a refresher for anyone who hasn't played it in a little bit, doesn't know what I'm talking about, the sun is dying there. And as the sun is dying, it's sending out bigger and bigger flares. It's getting hotter. And that is stripping the planet, Haystrom, of its magnetosphere. And the radiation is so intense that the sunlight is just frying anything organic, anything at all, including your shields. Now, this would be par for the course with weird Mass Effect planet climates like we run into in some worlds of Mass Effect, especially in the planet cards. But apparently this is unexpected for this specific solar system. The Dolan star is the one we're referencing. So that's why Tally was sent there with a team to do some research, or at least retrieve some research. Here she is. Here's what she says to us about this. After we fight through hordes of Geth to save her, by the way, here she is right here.
What can you tell me about your research here?
Haystrom's sun is destabilizing. Back when this was a Quarian colony, it was a normal star. It shouldn't change that quickly.
Any idea what's destabilizing the sun?
If I had to guess, I'd say that it was dark energy affecting the interior of the star. The effect is similar to when stars blow off mass to enter a red giant phase. But Haystrom's sun is far too young for this to be natural.
Okay, so thank you to Red Star Bolt for uploading that clip to YouTube. But you might have missed that, and I implore you, if you weren't paying close enough attention to what Tally was saying just there, just back this up about 30 seconds. Because that is like a huge, huge point for this entire dark energy thing. And she mentions it in about 29 seconds there.
Very short.
That is the most, that right there is the single deepest canon piece of lore that we get about dark energy.
Okay. So this is kind of where I went down a rabbit hole in real life, because Tally mentioned the fact that it's happening a lot faster than it should have. And I wanted to know what the real world timeline was. So the death stages of a star, we actually can track. It starts with the carbon burning that lasts about 600 years. Then over a year, the neon burns out. Then quickly over the next 6 months, the oxygen depletes. And then in the course of just a day, the remaining silicone burns off and can start to then either go supernova or red giant, depending on the mass of the original star.
All the silicone gone. That's horrible news for Pamela Anderson. Go on.
Oh. So we could assume that the OG Quarians founded this colony sometime during the carbon burning phase, when the star should have already been over a million years old and was beginning its death rattles. But obviously the introduction of dark energy changes the expected IRL timeline.
Right. So the timeline is pretty interesting to me, because like you just mentioned, the real world science, real world, quote unquote, real world science about dying stars and death stages, it actually lines up with why they think that this star is prematurely aging. If you remember, Tally says back when this was a Quarian colony, meaning on Haystrom, back when it was a Quarian colony. So this was before the Geth Rebellion. And that was about 300 years ago. I was curious about the timeline here, and the way Tally tells it, you would think that everything was like dandy back then when it was a Quarian colony. There were no signs of the star aging, blah, blah, but now there is, and that's the weird part. But I took a deeper look into the Codex, and I found that even back then, when the Quarians founded the colony, they founded it specifically to study the unstable sun. At the time, it was already threatening to erupt into a red giant. That's according to the Codex entry.
Yeah, so way ahead of the timeline schedule. I mean, we don't know the age of the star itself, but Tally is already stating that it's before its time.
Right, so this is something that the Quarians have been tracking for a little while. Tally was on Haystrom because she says the Admiralty thought it was important enough to risk Quarian lives. Now, she doesn't quite understand all of what's going on there. She's more upset because her squad was killed. And as we know, she was lucky to make it out alive at all, her and Cal Rieger, if you saved Cal Rieger, because the Geth were swarming that place. So, two things. Number one, the Admiralty knows more about dark energy than we do and is devoting their most precious resource toward it, people. And I say that because the population is closely monitored and regulated on the fleet.
Yeah. To think about putting Quarians intentionally, like, we don't know what's going to be happening here. The timeline has rapidly increased of when this star is dying out. So the standard 600 years that it takes could be 6 days for all we know. Yet the Admiralty Board thought that it was important enough to go out there and figure out what's going on.
Right. And every single Quarian they're taking to go on that mission, everyone has a job on the fleet. So anyone that's dying is you're literally leaving a job open, back open on the fleet. And someone has to step in to replace that. Who's going to do that? So it's a big deal. If you're the Admiralty and you're looking at things from a macro point of view. But number two, the Geth are also aware of this research, presumably. And they want to stop Tally from getting it back to the fleet. And I say that they're aware about the research because in those 300 years since the rebellion, the Geth have taken over the planet. And so that research was apparently being done by the Quarians in that colony, according to the Codex. So the Geth are aware of this research, and they are swarming Tally and her crew to stop them from getting it back to the fleet. Why?
Ooh. Okay. So I have theories on this, but I think that we need to get a little bit further in the episode before I can really talk about them, because that brings up a very interesting point.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can get a few more clues, I think, from Haystrom's own planet card. The planet card says the Geth have shown no signs of treating Dolan, the star, as a threat over the past 3 centuries, other than establishing several space stations near it. Dolan's magnetic eruptions and solar output overwhelm most communications near it, and it's unclear how the Geth have compensated. Today, spy probe scans indicate extensive orbital construction around Haystrom, housing thousands of Geth platforms and an unknown number of Geth software mines. It's not known how many Geth are on the planet's surface. So the Geth have already erected several space stations around the dying sun, monitoring it. They have an untold number of Geth people on Haystrom itself. So there's clearly something that the Geth deem worthy of monitoring and being there. And yet also, the Geth are capable of operating on this planet despite the extreme radiation. Even though that solar output is overwhelming most communications near Haystrom.
I could see that. You could definitely have it written in, you know, that their shielding is different than what the rest of the galaxy's species have, and they are made of metal. They could have a different alloy that they're using that helps prevent heat transference and things like that. They can withstand all of that. I could definitely see that the Geth would be able to live on this planet a little bit longer than some organic.
Do you remember whether or not those Geth were heretics? According to Legion? Does he specify? I can't remember. Uh-oh, the Geth have gotten Genesis. We've lost connection. She'll be back, I think. Hopefully the Geth relinquish her soon. There she is. Okay. I'm glad that you were able to defend off the Geth. Do you remember whether or not these Geth were heretics?
So that was actually kind of the point that I was going to bring up a little bit later is, were these Geth heretic back at that point? Because we didn't really learn of that terminology until we meet up with Legion. And most people have not met Legion by the time that we go on Tally's recruitment mission. So I don't know if we get a definite answer on that or not.
I think the implication is that they were, because if I remember right, just off the top of my head, I think Legion tells us that the Geth who are acting hostile are just doing so because they're following the old machines.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the implication there. Still pretty interesting that this is already a topic of interest that is attracting multiple species, and yet there are notable absences, aren't there?
Yeah, Definitely, because it seems like kind of a big deal. I'm surprised that we don't hear about any Asari scientists looking into this, or Solarians for that point. Totally seems like it would be their jam.
And I think maybe this is because Haystrom is a Quarian colony. Quarians are treated like dirt, and, or I should say, Haystrom was a Quarian colony. Now it's controlled and occupied by the Geth. So maybe the politics there could be muddling this perceived significance of it. But besides that, I'm not aware of any other solar system with a prematurely aging star. So the Asari might just dismiss it as an anomaly. Oh, that's just an anomaly, not worth the trouble of sending forces into Geth-controlled space. But it does make me reconsider some of the funky climate change stuff mentioned on some of the other planet cards.
Ooh. Yeah, maybe some of these ice planets that weren't expected to be this way, or violent windstorms, they all could be attributed to dark energy. We just don't know it.
Right. Apparently, but dark energy has this, you know, cosmological scale that it can affect things on, so.
Okay, so there has to be more, right? Or is Haystrom really the only place that this is brought up in the storyline?
So there are a couple of other small mentions. Do you remember meeting Gianna Parisini, my true love, on Ilium in Mass Effect 2? Well, for those who don't remember her name, she is the internal affairs agent for Mass Effect 1 on Novaria, and you can help her put Administrator Analeas behind bars. After we help her catch another white-collar crook in the stock trading plaza on Ilium, we can ask her what her next mission is about. And here's what she tells us.
What's up next for you?
Research. We've had some hacking attacks lately, and I want to make sure they're external. A lot of people are suddenly interested in dark energy. My bosses want to know if it's something to worry about.
And that is it. That is all she tells us about that. So basically, she mentions that there's been hacking attempts. She wants to know whether or not they're external or internal. And for some reason, it's also related to dark energy, something that a lot of people are getting interested about, she says.
Very interesting. But yeah, that doesn't really tell us a whole lot other than the fact that other people are looking into it.
It's definitely one of those things that, like, writers are putting in there to, like, you know, sow the seeds of a larger plot line gradually, right? Mm-hmm. So it's taunting us, it's titillating, if you will.
Very teasing.
Yes. It's but also I want to know more about the hacks. She's talking about hacks specifically. Well, what group do we know that is very skilled at hacking?
Maybe the Walking Computer Boys?
Yes, the Geth, also known as the Legion, being the MLG gamer that he is, because he's hacking. I think that that is a direct reference to what we find on Haystrom in Mass Effect 2. And I would not be surprised if the writer who wrote that was intending to reference the Geth with the hacks. That would make a lot more sense to me. Unfortunately, she doesn't go on about that. There's no secret cut content mission with Gianna Parisini that I'm aware of. If there is, I would hope that it would become a mod, because I'd love to play that. But yeah, that's pretty much it as far as I know, right? I mean, I think it might come up a little bit during some of the DLC.
It does. There are a couple of mentions of dark energy tied to the Arrival DLC. We actually have a codex entry on Object Row, which I think we've read out before, but now we have a different focus that we're going to be looking at. So Dr. Amanda Kenson's scientific team has cataloged three major discoveries on the artifact encased in the 157th Goloka asteroid. First, the large artifact is rooted into the core of the asteroid and has a barrier that is similar to, but much more powerful than, a biotic stasis field. This gives it an unnatural resilience to alteration or damage, and even prevents state-of-the-art laser drilling from extracting the smallest piece for analysis. Second, the object's interior is energetically active, with a quantum stasis field rivaling that of Prothean technology found in mass relays. Like those creations, it activates in response to threat, at which point the artifact consumes a phenomenal amount of power. Dr. Kenson's team believes that the object draws this power directly from dark matter, though how is still unknown.
Okay, so we have here mentioning that the artifact employs stasis fields, rivaling that of Prothean technology found in mass relays. And we also have mentions of biotic stasis fields, as well as there was one more Mass Effect technology related reference that you just said. I can't remember it right now, but all of this is pointing me back toward the references to dark energy in the Mass Effect 1 codex entries.
Mm-hmm. It's very similar to that. It is building that storyline a little bit more. You see, biotics use it, and now we have this object that can create almost its own biotic stasis field. Not an actual intentional sentient being using dark energy, but an object, which, wow. Okay, we know that Ro is definitely a little bit extra special, so.
Yeah, for sure. And we also know from having completed the Arrival DLC that ultimately Object Ro is in Reaper artifact. So the Reapers are able to engineer dark energy unlike we can, basically. That's what we're learning here. And we also see the reference to dark matter, which is different from dark energy if you ask an astrophysicist. However, I'm not even going to attempt to get into the definition difference there.
No. Matter versus energy, they are definitely different things. I think energy is expended and matter is when it's still in its solid state, but that's about the level of science that I can get into.
I guess it just doesn't matter. Anyway, what's the rest of that codex entry on Object Ro?
Yeah, so the third discovery is that the object broadcasts signals and information on many different spectra. One such pulse, suspected to be similar to a quantum entanglement communicator, reaches into Reaper territory.
Okay, so it can also autonomously communicate with different levels of signals, and one of them being similar to a QEC, which is the QEC is how we talk to Hackett and how we talk to Anderson in the Normandy in Mass Effect 3. It's why it's a secure communication. And this QEC reaches into Reaper territory. So that's making me think dark energy can be manipulated not just to affect mass, but as a communications technique, which is very fascinating, considering that We do that with radio waves, and radio waves do not have a mass, but they can convey information. So it's not crazy to think that a wave created by dark energy could travel even faster and convey information that way.
And I mean, we do see this because it's that pulsing that lets us know the timeline of when the Reapers are going to arrive in the Arrival DLC.
Right. Maybe this is one of those things that they wrote as kind of like an after the animations were made kind of thing to, okay, well, we kind of got to explain why that thing is pulsating.
Yeah, the blooming onion it needed a reason.
Hey, put that down. Making an awkward moment in Brookstone. Anyway, the Alpha Relay from Arrival also makes a brief mention of dark energy, specifically about it containing a reserve of Ezo. Here's what the Codex entry tells us. Dr. Amanda Kinson concluded that the oldest known relay is in Batarian space. Dubbed Alpha, it resides near the star Bahak and is unusual in its potential range and versatility. Alpha usually sends and receives mass at the range of a normal secondary relay, but if certain controls are adjusted, it becomes powered by an unprecedented amount of dark energy. That could send cargo to 16 other relays and even across a great distance to the Citadel. Hegemony authorities have kept this quiet, fearing retaliation from Council species, who would assume hostile intent if they found a sudden new route into their space. It goes without saying that the Reapers have no such fear. Okay, very interesting here that the Alpha Relay has apparently an uncommon amount of dark energy that it can tap into whenever it wants.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about that, because now at least we know why did the Reapers choose the Alpha Relay to be their entry point into our soul, into our universe, into our galaxy. And this makes sense because Reapers are obviously huge. And especially in comparison to, you know, we see only a few ships at a time are able to travel through a relay. And I know that when it's us on the Normandy, it's only us traveling one ship at a time. But to think of how much energy it would take to send in hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of Reapers all at once, that's an insane amount of energy that would be required. Using the Alpha Relay that can handle that, now at least we know why.
And this is really, really critical to the Reapers' mobilization efforts, because the Reapers seem to, like, their standard operating protocol when it comes to reaping is blitzkrieg. Just all of a sudden storm in, overwhelm everything, and no one has a chance. And so if they can have their first point of contact, the Alpha Relay, besides the Citadel is supposed to be, I think, the first point of contact. So maybe the Alpha Relay is a failsafe. So if they can have that failsafe expedite their arrival, see what I did there? Yeah. Then it can help them make sure that everything goes according to plan, even when it doesn't.
And I guess it does make a lot of sense, because the Citadel Relay is small, like actually physically smaller in comparison to the rest of the relays. That's why only one Reaper at a time, only Sovereign comes through. I almost said Sov. Cyberpunk is leaking in. That's why only Sovereign is able to show up. And so now we have this Alpha Relay, the large one out there in space where more and more can show up all at once. I love Mass Effect. The fact that so much of this lore is woven in together in such a beautiful way, and that it all just fits and works and doesn't feel forced.
It just works. So was there something more to this? Was dark energy supposed to factor into the original endings we got in Mass Effect 3? We have to go to the mid-break now, but when we get back, we have got the definitive answer from one of the series writers. Okay, we'll be right back.
We have beef, we have bacon, we have beer, the foods of my people.
Young men have funny ideas of what Asari are like. I blame the extranet and computer games.
Rex?
Shepard.
Grunt?
Shepard.
Rex? Grunt?
All right, and here we are in the middle of the show where we read your five-star reviews. We have a new one from Silver Abyss, who writes, top-tier podcast. Sam, Jen, and formerly Tom, I just want to say that I have truly enjoyed this podcast. I started about a year and a half ago as I was listening to the Cups Assassin's Creed Lorecast, and I ran out of their episodes. I'm an Air Force recruiter, and I travel a lot. Listening to podcasts makes my commute more tolerable. I finally caught up to the Mass Effect Lorecast, and I am amazed at the attention to detail that you've demonstrated and how much I did not know about Mass Effect. This may seem controversial, but my favorite portion were the 8 episodes of Liara. She is my equivalent to Legend and Ashley. Every playthrough I've done, I've always romanced her, even when I attempt to romance others. I'm looking forward to the weekly updates now. I should go. Well, thank you, Silver Abyss. Thank you so much for that. And also, very happy that we can keep you company on your work travels. I like to think that we are influencing the decisions that people make at work because we're talking about Mass Effect. But thank you so much for listening, and we will try and keep you entertained every week. Now comes the sound effects pop quiz, and I have a voice line for you, Genesis. This is, in my opinion, a rather tough one. Okay, so I will be kind of surprised if you get this. Okay, here we go. I'm going to play it right now for you.
For what? Scaring off the mark? I do not blame you, but do not presume too much.
Okay, I'll play it one more time.
For what? Scaring off the mark? I do not blame you, but do not presume too much.
All right. Any guesses?
Okay. I am going to go with Jaira, Mass Effect 3, Citadel DLC.
All right, I'll give you another guess. You get one more.
I need a hint, buddy, because it was like my first one. I know it wasn't her. I know it's not Gianna. Big, I'm just trying to think.
All right, you've got the correct race. You've got the correct race of person.
It's an Asari chasing off the mark. Is it the one who helps you coordinate the taxi in ME2? Oh, or is it the detective? Oh, shiz. You know what? I will go with the detective on Samara's recruitment mission.
It is actually Maylene Kalis who asks you to wiretap Rafael Vargas on Novaria in Mass Effect 1. She's the representative from the Armali Council, and she wants you to spy on Binary Helix and get her intel from them.
Is this what happens when you fail it?
It is, yep.
Okay.
So that's why I was like, there's no way that Genesis has failed this mission before. And I know that I can get her with this one. So I'm glad that I finally got you. All right, cue the applause. Okay.
My weakness is never failing.
Okay, and now we shout out our Tier 5 patrons, William, Superfly 440, Retrobot, Lieutenant Tosino, Kira C, Ed Boy, and Draco, and for the final time, Commander Shrinky Shep, thank you so much for your continued support of this show. And although, you know, we're going to miss you, but of course we can always talk to you, and anyone else that wants to talk to you can talk to you in the Discord. And if you want to talk to any of us, you can join the Discord. The link is in the show notes. So with that, let's get back to the rest of the show.
After time adrift among open stars, along tides of light and through shoals of dust, I will return to where I began.
Solarian reproduction different, very little sex drive. If intended to try human, would try you.
Ow, my pancreas.
Okay, Genesis, what did the Mass Effect lore father Drew Karpyshyn himself say about this dark energy plotline?
Okay, so I do have some details on what a source says, but for this portion, I can't actually confirm who it was. They stated that one of the possible original endings was that the Reaper's goal was to find a way to stop the spread of dark energy. But we can't actually confirm that it was Drew Karpyshyn that said that.
Right.
Just a source within BioWare.
Yes. And I think this was originally posted on the Something Awful forums, right? Like way back in the day. And it was someone claiming to be a source within BioWare. So could have been BS, could have been an actual source within BioWare. But this is kind of the granddaddy of what fueled a lot of what would later become what people think of when they think of dark energy and the lost plot line within Mass Effect, that it was going to be the Reaper's goal to stop this entropy of the universe, right?
Right. That it was dark energy was going to consume the entire universe and obliterate us all. And that the Reapers were not this overwhelming evil, but actually a group of whole nations that had fused together to stop the spread of dark energy.
So it wasn't like this authoritarian boot had been planted on their heads. It was almost like nation upon nation of people was sacrificing them. They were sacrificing themselves to eventually stop this greater bad.
Exactly. And all working together. I mean, I don't know if it's harmoniously, but they were working together, building their own Reaper forms in order to hopefully help stop the spread of dark energy.
Talk about a deal with the devil, right? Like, basically the devil being the circumstances in this perspective of, like, dark energy is the entropy of the universe and it's going to kill us all. Then you shake the devil's hand and you lose all your superhero powers, and just like Hercules in the Disney movie, shaking Hades' hand. And then the bad thing happens anyway. But sorry, go on.
Yeah, I mean, the source goes on to say that the truth behind the human Reaper they were building was a Hail Mary attempt because the Reapers had run out of time. And humans have the most genetic diversity of any species in the galaxy and represented the best chance at stopping the dark energy.
Okay, so my first thought is this is a hard sell. My second thought is this reminds me of what is basically fed to us during Morden's loyalty mission in Mass Effect 2, that humans represent a fantastic control group in medical trials because of their genetic diversity. And then also what we talked about during the rapid expansion of humanity episode, that perhaps this genetic diversity has allowed humans to have a level of adaptability that no other race has. So here it is coming up again, that the genetic diversity, they have the greatest genetic diversity, and therefore they represented the best chance at stopping dark energy. This, in my opinion, though, is a little flimsy, because it's like, how exactly are the Reapers stopping dark energy?
Yeah, we don't really get an answer to that in this supposed possibility. I don't know what even our genetic diversity would do to help that, or what the Reapers would be able to accomplish with having all of it. Like, what, you get 8 billion different forms of DNA, and then it's going to be able to help stop the spread of dark energy? That part we have no answers to.
Right. So what does this source say about how this would have affected the endings?
So in this scenario, the ending choice would have been to, quote, kill the Reapers and put your faith in the races of the galaxy in finding a way to stop the spread with what little time is left, or sacrifice humanity, allowing them to be horrifically processed in hopes that the end result will justify the means. And that sounds very Mass Effect-y.
That does, especially with the first part, kill the Reapers and put your faith in the races of the galaxy in finding another way to stop the conflict between synthetics and organics. That's just the destroy ending. That's just the destroy ending. And also, if your EMS isn't high enough, you are sacrificing humanity.
Yep. So, and that's what I kind of want to go with what the lore father himself did say, because he posted on that website formerly known as Twitter and has stated that dark energy was on the table at one point. But the original idea for the ending was all about the Reapers and mass relays.
Okay, so now, basically he is refuting whatever this source who claims to work inside BioWare, he's refuting that, basically saying that dark energy was on the table at one point. And for those who don't know, Drew Karpyshyn was the lead writer on Mass Effect 1 and 2, but then afterward, Drew Karpyshyn moved on to other projects. Drew Karpyshyn was not the lead writer in Mass Effect 3. However, even without him being the lead writer, he's saying dark energy was never the original idea for the ending. The ending was all about the Reapers and mass relays, whatever that means. Sounds like they hadn't really worked out all the specifics yet.
Right, because he did leave Mass Effect near the ending of it to work on SWTOR before the ending was solidly in place. And before he played the final version of the game, which I thought was really interesting, he put out this statement. From what I hear, the basic concept of the original ending is there, though some details may have been tweaked. So from what he says is that the endings was kind of what he originally planned. It didn't really have anything to do with dark energy.
Okay, so that might be a little disappointing for people who really love this dark energy plotline and always kind of wanted that to be the ending. But it sounds like most of what people have built up in their minds to be this in this dark energy ending, it actually might just be horse crap, because it sounds like there is no confirmation of anything that source had posted on those forums. Those forums presumably not requiring you to prove your identity anyway. So the dark energy plotline may have come to that ending, but the guy who like was creating the dark energy plotline also says the basic concept of the original ending is already there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so even if we had dark energy play into it, I really don't know if I would have liked the idea of that was my final choice. You know, for me, it's like, why? Okay, so I have to put my faith in other creatures, other species, our current galaxy right now, in order to rapidly come up with a fix to a problem we didn't know existed yet, to a problem that we have no ideas about, to a problem that these other species, the Reapers, have been working on for millennia and have not solved the issue to yet. And now we're supposed to have it, what, solved within the next 2 minutes, or entire, you know, everything is destroyed? Or sacrifice quite literally everything, all humanity.
Yeah, that would have pissed people off if that were the ending. I mean, you think people are pissed off at the Mass Effect 3 ending now. You want to talk about that being the ending and people having the same complaints about, well, my choices didn't matter. That on top of, guess what? Here's a huge plot plot point that is totally integral to the entire story, and you learned about it in the last 2 minutes. Talk about a rug pull.
Yeah, because obviously there was not a whole lot of dark energy talk in Mass Effect 3. If they had interwoven it or brought it up more within 3, then maybe I could see how the ending could have played out this way. But they would have had to have changed a lot of different things. You know, there would have been more and more pushing us towards finding out what happened and the dark energy. You know, Haystrom would have been brought up again and again, you know, other things. And it's not there.
So had it been woven within Mass Effect 3, how do you think that it would have changed our Mass Effect 3 endings? Because I can already imagine that the way that we would learn about it, if it were continued and if it were brought to this level of prominence that this source thinks that it would have in the endings, then maybe our crewmate, who is the Shadow Broker, would tell us about it.
Right, or the guest who had interactions with the old Reaper gods, you know, anybody at some point would have been able to tell us that this is what they were here. Or Javik, who was around the first time, would have been able to bring this up, that the Reapers are not here to slaughter everybody wholesale just because they wanna. No, it's because they're trying to stem the tide of dark energy taking over.
Right. Yeah. The whole thing with Javik, getting Javik early in the game, he'd be able to basically just refute all of it. Well, maybe not, because he was in like a far-flung area and communications were severed. He can't answer a lot of questions about the Prothean Empire in specific detail because he was just a soldier. So maybe not. But he still, I think, would have known at least a little bit. Maybe we would have learned more from Vigil, considering that Vigil was protecting the Empire's greatest minds in stasis.
Mm-hmm.
So,
or even, yep.
I'm trying to think of the third one. Introducing it would have introduced a ton of shit that needed to be retconned.
Yeah. And I don't like the idea of doing that.
Yeah. Like, that would have... Like Karpyshyn already said, like, publicly, the original ending was already there. Like, this is the basic concept. Details may have been tweaked, as he says. But it sounds like that was never really the agenda. To make dark energy the, I don't know, the focal point of the ending.
Right. And it also then would completely throw the indoctrination theory ending out the window, too.
And we do love the indoctrination theory, don't we? Okay, so if they did not throw out, like, if the developers did not get rid of the whole idea of dark energy entirely, like, let's say it's still in play. How could this affect the next Mass Effect?
Oh, okay. Working it into Andromeda and the reason of the Scourge, what was causing all of this to begin with, I think that it could be woven in. It would feel a little retconny in order to bring, you know, everything that was happening in Andromeda with the cat and all of that, and then bringing it back, especially with, like, I could also see it being the way that Jarl's skin is electromagnetic. They could say that that is what, you know, it's caused by the dark energy, you know, the different things that are going on. Could be woven in that way and bring it back to the Milky Way. I could also see it being possibly, now that we know it's there, trying to harness it. I could see that that's what the big evil being of now people are starting to weaponize the idea of dark energy and dark matter. If you can blow up a star in half the time it would normally take, I could see that being on a mass war scale of, all right, well, what's going to happen when we start to burn out Sol? What happens when we start to burn out, I can't remember Palavin's star right now, but...
That is a great point. And it reminds me of what Liara says about humanity in that teaser trailer.
Oh.
Whoa. Brain blast. Someone put this on their calendar for whenever the next Mass Effect comes out, and if we were onto something, let us know. But yeah, if you could tap into an Ezo reserve large enough to create unprecedented amounts of dark energy, then you could prematurely age stars. And what did we just cover that says it can tap into unprecedented amounts of dark energy, a mass relay? And that mass relay looking thing is in the teaser for the next Mass Effect. And it's got Cerberus colors on it.
And everything about the way that that trailer looked like when the windows, everything opened up, didn't it look like it was a really hot, arid, deserty place outside?
Either that or like a nuclear winter. I couldn't tell which, but yeah.
Also very Haystrom like, you mean?
Somewhat, yeah. That would be crazy. Wow. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I was thinking also in terms of if they could still keep the trend of Mass Effect space opera going, because dark energy is a bigger bad than the Reapers.
Mm-hmm.
So the next Mass Effect could be us retroactively learning that the Reapers, yes, they were trying to stop synthetic, organic war, whatever, but little did they know, they were exacerbating the entropy of the universe by weaponizing dark energy like they did through the Alpha Relay. That was one of the plot holes that I always thought, like that stands at great odds with this source who says that dark energy was supposed to be a great plot line ending in Mass Effect, the original trilogy, because if that were the case, then why are the Reapers making the problem worse by using Object Row and the Alpha Relay, which creates a stupendous amount of dark energy?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty big hole to stab into it.
But, like, they would know that they were creating that problem, too. So yeah, maybe the next Mass Effect is us trying to find a way to stop this entropy of the universe, this dark energy laden entropy. And you know what? That would not be very popular, considering that I can imagine, as an allegory for climate change, the player character having to go and talk to the galactic powers and say, hey, we know that our entire galactic society is built upon Mass Effect technology, but this is literally killing us. We need to find a different way.
Yeah, that would definitely be difficult. But if we're playing as Shepard, at least maybe they'll frickin' listen to us the first time we say it this time around.
I think it doesn't matter who we're playing as. They're not going to listen to us. All right. Well, I think that's all we got for this week. Thank you, Commander Shrinky Shep, for sponsoring another great episode of the Mass Effect Lorecast. I hope that this provided people a different take on dark energy than they are used to with those hype-filled 11-minute long YouTube videos that promise way more than they can deliver in their titles and thumbnails. We wanted to stick to what we know, what was alleged in the Mass Effect community, and what we can refute. And I think that we got it. So what do you think, Jen?
I think we did too. I also really wanted to thank Shrinky for putting these thoughts together for what we can talk about each month. And I'm going to be missing it. But hopefully we get to continue at least a couple speculation episodes every once in a while, because these are fun for me. Nerding out about Mass Effect is definitely something that has brought us all together. And you get to a point where you go from, all right, here's where the lore sits and where it's based. And then what can we glean from it? What can we sci-fi about it? Fantasy.
And we are throwing enough darts that I think, like, eventually one of them is going to stick on the next Mass Effect in some capacity. And then, you know, I'll have the shameless opportunity to go, I told you so, as if I didn't have like 99 other incorrect predictions. So,
oh yeah,
can't wait. No,
I got one thing right about Veil Guard, and I was like, see, yep, I told you that was going to be there, and it was there.
Right. Well, you are the Oracle, and I'm hoping that you stick around. That way we can get some more predictions about how the next Mass Effect is going to go. But what do we have going for next week? We're going to talk to the patrons. So I don't think the patrons have decided what the month of June's patron chat topic is going to be. Could be about dark energy. Who knows? But that's all we got for this week, Spectres. Tune in next week and you'll get to hear us with the whole crew. Until next time, we should go. Thanks for listening to the Mass Effect Lorecast. Reach out to us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Discord, Patreon, or email us at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Join us next week for more lore. Same space, same time. Or check out our live streams at twitch.tv/masseffectlorecast.